and welcome back to another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. I'm your host, Eric Fisher. This is the show where I talk to the people behind the productivity. This week, I'm excited to share with you a conversation I had with Ruth Sukup. She's got a brand new book out called Do It Scared: Finding the Courage to Face Your Fears, Overcome Obstacles, and Create a Life You Love. And you can guess it pretty easily, the topic of this conversation is fear, and there's a ton of great research that we start to dig into in this conversation from her book. And specifically, we talk about the 7 distinct ways that fear can play out in our lives and hold us back. And as you know, one of the components of productivity is getting things done, doing things. And one of the major pieces when it comes to fear is paralysis, stopping you. So in other words, fear can be an obvious recurring roadblock to your productivity, which is why it's great to have a conversation like this. And so in the conversation, Ruth and I talk about 3 of the fears that play out for me. I wanted to make this personal for you. And then some of the ways that that can be overcome. And then even moving into an action plan to starting to get things done, even when you are scared. Again, hence doing it scared, not just alleviating the fear or overcoming the fear, but moving past it and doing it whether you're still scared or not. So this is a great conversation to gain more awareness on what fears you may have that are holding you back. Some you may not even be aware of, or maybe you are, but you just don't know that they are fear masking itself as some sort of truth, as we get into in this conversation as well. So I know you're really going to enjoy this. I know I had a great time talking with Ruth. So here you go. Enjoy this conversation with Ruth Sukup. Well, this week it is my privilege to welcome to the show Ruth Sukup. Ruth, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So this is a topic that sometimes can be, I don't know, it can be difficult or maybe a little bit weird to talk about, especially when it comes to productivity, but it ties directly into it. We're going to talk about fear. And for me, fear is something that gives you paralysis. And when it comes to productivity, it's all about action, or at least we often talk about action. There's way more to productivity than just taking action. There's taking a break. There's having rest. There's taking time to decide what the right action is. But again, once you've decided what the right action is and you're going to do it, if fear gets in the way and stops you, not a good thing.
I think fear is directly related to productivity. So yeah, in so many ways.
Yeah. So, but you got a great brand new book out called Do It Scared: Finding the Courage to Face Your Fears, Overcome Adversity, and Create the Life You Want. And by the way, I'm impressed. You've got both Dan Miller and Michael Hyatt, two of my friends, both endorsing the book. So it's got to be good.
Aren't they the best?
they are the best.
That's so funny. I didn't know Dan Miller was one of your friends. That's who I was just getting off the phone with. That's why I was a few minutes late.
That's awesome. So that's really cool. Yeah, I've stayed at his sanctuary a number of times. That was my Throwback Thursday on Instagram last week. I took a really cool shot of his, I don't know if it's silver or what kind of metal it is, but he's got these great eagles there, one that's carved of wood and one that's kind of done out of metal. And you can see it from his office there. And that was what I posted. And I thought, you know, I was sitting there reflecting on, you know, how great it is to be able to visit and, you know, hang out with people that have years on you in age, but more so in wisdom. And Dan's just always been there. So
that's great. Yes, he is one of my favorite people.
Yeah,
for sure.
So, well, I would love to hear, I mean, obviously there's a story behind creating a book like this, and usually it's born out of, you know, your own personal story. So I'd love to hear a little bit of a preface here about, like, what is your personal story? What is your relationship with, what is your relationship with fear? No.
No, that's a big question. Yeah, you know, this book definitely was born a little bit out of my own story, and I certainly talk a little bit about my own story in the book, but also it was really born out of the experiences of my audience and the things that people were coming to me and saying and the themes that I started noticing. But I'm happy to start by sharing a little bit of my own story, especially as a person, as an adult, as an entrepreneur. I think my adult story starts really in my early 20s. I went through a really bad depression, very serious depression. And it very nearly ended my life. I had multiple suicide attempts and ended up in the hospital on life support with less than a 10% chance of waking up with my worst suicide attempt. I spent 2.5 years in and out of psychiatric hospitals. And at the end of all of that, you know, I found myself divorced, bankrupt, at complete rock bottom. I had done, you know, all sorts of self-harm and self-destructive behavior. So I looked like hell. You know, I chopped off all my hair and I had piercings and had cut up my arms and legs and just was really, really not in a good place. And so I got through, you know, got to the end of that. In fact, doctors tried all different treatments. They tried all different medications and nothing really worked. And they finally resorted to electroshock therapy, which most people don't even know that they still do. But they do. And then finally they finished that and said, okay, there's nothing more we can do for you. We can't help you. And, they sent me home to my dad's house. Basically, I think they sent me home to die. And, that was really the moment where I was like, I have ruined my entire life. I'm 24 years old. I've got no friends. I've got no degree. I've got no money. I've got no job. I've got literally nothing. And it was completely and utterly terrifying to be in that place with no hope. And so stayed in that place probably for a few months, and I would lay in bed all day long and couldn't even get the energy to even get out of bed until finally my dad, who could not stand watching that. You know, I can't, and now that I'm a parent, I have a lot more sympathy for how excruciating that must have been for, because I can't imagine watching your child be in that much pain. And he finally convinced me, begged and pleaded with me, but finally convinced me to just go to the gym 3 times a week and walk on the treadmill for a half an hour each time. So then I would literally go and just put one foot in front of the other for a half an hour and then go back to bed. But eventually I think it was just the process of putting that one foot in front of the other that gave me enough of something. I don't even know what it was, enough of something to then say, okay, well maybe something could be different. And so I ended up calling a therapist. I got out the phone book. This was back when there were still phone books. Got out the phone book and kind of just picked one and called her up. And I said, I've just spent the last 2.5 years talking about every bad thing that's ever happened to me. It hasn't worked. I'm not better. I don't want to talk about it anymore. And all I really need to know now is how to live, because I don't even know how to do that. And so that was what she helped me do. And she, again, literally helped me put one foot in front of the other, doing just the smallest things at first. It was learning how to go to the grocery store without having a panic attack, and then getting a part-time job, and then getting a full-time job, and then getting an apartment, moving out on my own, and then going back to school. And eventually, one very small step at a time, I was able to put back the pieces of my life. And I ended up going to law school and dropping out of law school, but I met the man who then became my second husband, and eventually we got married and I had a couple of kids. And so fast forward a few years where I had put my life back together, and found myself in 2010 as a stay-at-home mom of two little kids, and decided to start a blog and a blog about living well and spending less. And I very quickly after starting this blog went, oh my gosh, there's people who are making money on the internet. I think I could do that. I want to do that too. And so I decided to turn this blog into a business and decided to learn everything I possibly could about the business side of having an online business or having a blog, and what that looked like and what that meant. And eventually then was able to build that up and to a very successful business. In 2013, my husband was able to retire from his job, and my business has continued to grow to what it is now, which is a $5 million company, a multimedia company. We've got, you know, all sorts of different things going on. But when I look back on that, and especially my journey as an entrepreneur, there's so many parallels to my journey with depression, because I feel like every step of the way, it's been taking one step at a time and just doing things, doing it scared every single step of the way. That was my motto. That was actually my personal motto when I was going through that depression. And then it became the first core value of my company. And it's something that I started sharing with my audience. And that's where the idea for the book came in, because what I noticed was that it was resonating with so many people. Yeah. So that's where we are today.
Wow. So I got two or three observations real quick. Number one, you started off with some really heavy stuff there. And I do want to say, the way that you talk about it in such a, not a positive light, but with a positive tone, that it means that you've really like gone through it and come out the other end and are, you're still yourself, but you're a different person in a way. Yeah. And so there's that, but I also don't want to just go into the rest of our conversation saying, yeah, no, she dealt with depression. Da, 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 da. Like that was really heavy stuff. And so if anybody out there has any issues with that, don't like make light of that. Right. Like, no. That would be your experience or your, reaching out to them, you'd give them that advice.
I'm glad that you said that. And because sometimes I forget because you're exactly right. Like I've walked that road. I have gone through it. I have experienced that. And I can talk about it now to the point where it's not difficult for me to talk about it. It's not emotional because I've moved past it. And that has taken me 20 years, but I remember being in that place. And this is actually why I like talking about it and why I hope that if you are listening and you have been experiencing, depression or anything similar to that, that what I remember from that time is that I would never see anyone who had come out the other side. And so, because when you're in the hospital, when you're in a psychiatric hospital, kind of, I think it's similar to rehab, which I've never been to rehab, but I've heard it's the same way. It's almost like a revolving door. The same people just keep coming back over and over and over again because nobody ever gets better. And so you start to feel like there is no hope. There's no hope that once you are labeled with this, either once you're labeled with that, you don't get to take away that label, that you're always going to be that way. And I remember I used to say that to my doctors. Well, how can you tell me I'm going to get better? Nobody ever gets better. You can't point to one single person that's gotten better. And now I get to be that person for people to say there is hope. It is hard work and you are going to have to work through some hard stuff and you will have to feel the pain, because I think for me, for so long, I was so desperate to not feel those feelings and to not experience the pain that I was feeling that I would, that's where the self-harm came from. That's where all the self-destructive behavior came from, because I didn't want to feel anything. So feeling physical pain was easier than feeling the emotional pain. But when I was finally able to walk through it and come out the other side, that is, and to do it scared along the way, that is where now I can be at a point where I can say, if I can build this multi-million-dollar company, having gone through everything that I went through, there is hope for you no matter where you are at right now. I promise you there is not anything that you've screwed up so badly that you can't still redeem it and make something great of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with you. And again, it's going to be, everybody's got a different story. Things are, your circumstance is different from others and but reach out, find somebody, get help. And again, much like as we move into the rest of this conversation and talk about how fear can be a factor into that, fear is also something that is different. It's different for everybody, the way they experience it. Or a better way to put it maybe would be, fear holds us all back in different ways.
Yes. Yes. And that was the really cool part that came out of the research for this book. So what happened was that, I started hearing so many people in my community talking, saying things, not even necessarily like, I feel so afraid, but I feel stuck, or I feel like I'm sitting on the sidelines of my own life. And you talk about going after your big goals and dreams. And I don't know, I just want something. I don't know how to do that. And it got me so curious. And so I started digging deeper, and we ended up surveying more than 4,000 people over the course of this research. And it was more data than I even knew what to do with, to the point where we had to hire a whole team of researchers and psychologists to help us get through all the data and make sense of it all. But what we discovered is that fear really does look different for everyone. We all experience fear, but the way that it manifests itself is a little bit unique for every single person, but there are some distinct patterns that happen. There's seven patterns that we recognize that are called the seven fear archetypes. And so we each have a little bit of all seven of these archetypes, but usually for most people, there's one or two, or sometimes even three or four, that are most prevalent and therefore probably most impacting your life. But what's really interesting about that is that all of the fear, or most of the fear that's happening, we don't even experience it necessarily as fear. What we experience it as is as truth because it's happening subconsciously. And so once you can start to recognize those patterns and the way that fear is playing out in your life, that's when you can start to do something about it. So you can recognize the fear archetype and then go, oh my gosh, I was just experiencing this as truth, but now I see how this pattern is holding me back.
I was trying to figure out what my fear archetype was. And as I was going through it, now that you've said this idea of fear likes to, how did you put it? Fear likes to hide as the truth or presents itself as the truth?
Yes, we experience it. We don't experience it necessarily as fear. We experience it as truth because it happens subconsciously. So it just happens. Right. This is the way that we feel and the thoughts that happen automatically without us really realizing it. So gotcha. The experience is not that, oh, this is my fear, but this is my truth.
Yes. But since it is fear, it's not the truth. It's actually a lie that we believe is the truth.
Yes, exactly.
So for example, the first archetype is the procrastinator, and that's when you're afraid to make a mistake. So the fear would be that you're going to make a mistake, but it presents itself as a truth that I make mistakes.
Yes, that or so for a lot of times, the procrastinator is another word for perfectionist. Mm-hmm. So the way that it might, the way you might experience is I'm just a perfectionist. I like everything just has to be right all the time. I like things to be perfect and there's nothing wrong with that. I want it to be perfect. And that might be the truth that you're experiencing and not even realizing that the deeper fear there is this fear of making a mistake. And it's a fear that could actually be holding you back. And I think it's important to recognize too, with all of these seven fear archetypes, that there are actually positive qualities of each one. So they are all fears and they all have negative sounding names. And there are a lot of negative qualities in each one, but there are also benefits. There are parts of each of these fears that serve us, which is why we cling to them, because they're the things that make us feel safe too.
Yeah, I can see that when I'm looking at them and I'm thinking of, I'm trying to think of another example that kind of rung true for me. So let's see here. I had marked them. Let's see. Okay. So the excuse maker, when you're most afraid of taking responsibility, and I'm trying to think of how do I spin that? Well, you help me, coach me. you know what you're talking about.
Maker, there's that underlying fear of being blamed or being pinned down or of having other people hold you accountable or hold your feet to the fire for something. So there's the excuse maker. The way that I explain that for the excuse maker is they're the friend that never wants to pick the restaurant because if people don't like it, then it's their fault. And so that is, so what you're experiencing, then the truth that you're experiencing is I can't let anything be my fault. Mm-hmm. Like nothing can be my fault. It can't be my fault because then that'll mean something's wrong with me. If I'm to blame for this, then something's wrong with me. So I'm always looking for someone else, some reason. And a lot of times those excuses even happen so naturally and come so easily that we don't even recognize them for excuses.
Right. Yeah. So that one definitely rings true for me. The restaurant excuse or the restaurant metaphor there, the example. I even have a couple of friends of mine where that's exactly how we all are. And so we've kind of gotten into the ritual of, okay, you know what? We're never going to end up going anywhere or eating anything if we don't just choose something. And then let's just throw it out there and see how it feels. Like, let's try that on and say, do we feel like that? Yeah, I'm in. And, you know, and if, you know, and since we all don't really care, then, yeah, you know, it maybe works. So
sometimes it's really easy to self-diagnose, but sometimes it's not quite as easy to self-diagnose. But a lot of times as you're reading it, what I've noticed from the people who have been able to get their hands on an early copy of the book, they can easily recognize friends and family in the different mm-hmm. archetypes. They can go, oh, I totally know somebody who's an excuse maker. I know somebody who's a self-doubter. But when it comes to seeing your own things, sometimes it's a little bit harder, which is why the assessment can be a really valuable tool.
Yeah, I can tell you right now, I definitely recognized family and friends. And I think the three that stuck out to me the most were, it was procrastinator, it was excuse maker. Those are the two we've actually already mentioned. And then I think the third one was actually the pessimist. So,
oh, really?
And I was just like, oh, but I think it is like, you know, it's adversity. That's why, you know, when it comes to like, that's why, okay. And I know why, because adversity to me is like when something gets really, really challenging. But that's also why I really like watching like the Rocky movies or Batman, somebody who like, you know, pulls themselves up and overcomes the adversity.
Yes.
So,
yeah. Well, and for the pessimist, a lot of times the pessimist is one where it's somebody who has experienced something hard or some sort of adversity, legitimate adversity. So either an illness or financial hardship or some sort of tragedy or trauma or being betrayed by someone else or, you know, something that is actually like quite serious. But what happens for the pessimist is that instead of looking at that as an opportunity to overcome, they sort of stay stuck there and want to close in and not overcome anything else because they're afraid that, you know, why should I even bother? It's just, I'm just going to get hurt again, or I'm just going to experience pain again. And that is where that fear can hold you back and keep you stuck if you get stuck in that victim mentality.
Yeah. So I guess I really should just take the test and now see. And now that I wanted to study them all first and then kind of take it. So,
you know, you can do it either way. I think that it's really like it can be helpful either way to learn about them first and then to take it, or to take it like knowing what you already are. I would think that I would probably want to do it the way that you were doing it too. I didn't get that option because I wrote the book, but
yeah. Well, and it fits me. I'm an Enneagram 5. So my whole thing is like, oh, I want to gather as much information as I can. And then, so it fits me to a T to have gone that route.
Well, and if you resonated a lot with the procrastinator/perfectionist, then probably that you probably have a little, that sounds like you have a little bit of that in there too.
Yep. Yeah. So, so people can take the test without grabbing the book. Is that possible?
Yes.
They can do that on your site.
Just go to our website at doitscared.com and take that assessment. And we have a free version and a premium version. And the premium version is the free version gives you your top archetype. The premium version gives you a lot more in-depth information about your top three and how they interact together, and then gives you your overall fear score and shows you how you rate on all seven of them. And right now we have bonuses available with the book. So if you've ordered the book, you can get the assessment, the premium assessment as one of the bonuses.
Perfect.
So that's if you're interested in this topic and planning on ordering the book, I would definitely do that before upgrading to the premium assessment.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I'll make sure to link that up in the show notes for this episode so people can find it real easy, and then they can move on from there. This episode is brought to you in part by Timeular. Timeular is a brilliant, tangible time tracking solution. You know how important time tracking is because we've talked about it on the show before. And without tracking your time, you don't know how much time you're spending on things. Kind of like a budget, where if you're not keeping track of how many Starbucks you're buying in a month and realizing that it's getting up into the $50 to $100 mark, where that money is better spent, although money on caffeine is a good cause or a good line item for your monthly budget, it may be higher than you think it should be and you need to course correct. Same thing applies with time. You may be spending a lot of time on things that may be worthwhile, but may not be the best thing you should be spending your time on at that moment, or across the board, cumulatively. And for those of us who don't feel like we have enough time to get everything done, you want to know what you've been spending your time on all day. And that's where Timeular comes in. Timeular, again, is a tangible, 8-sided physical time tracking device that makes time tracking easy. It even gamifies it to an extent. Once you connect your tracker to your computer or your smartphone with Bluetooth, you assign different tasks to each side of the tracker. And as you go about your day, you flip the tracker to the task you're working on. The side that is up is what will be tracked, and this reduces the friction of time tracking in so many ways. To be able to flip that thing, switch it to what you want it to be. Also, it kind of forces you to focus on what are the things that you're going to be doing that day and limit the options a bit. So you could have themed days where you've got a couple of different things throughout that day that you're going to be switching to. And then at the end of the day, you've got all of that stuff tracked. You've got analytics to go through, clear, simple, concise, to show you what you're spending your time on, to where you can make better decisions about how you're spending that time. Anyway, you've got to check it out. And you can get 10% off by going to timeular.com/beyond-the-to-do-list. That's Timeular, TIMEULAR.com/beyond-the-to-do-list. We've talked a bit about the fear archetypes. I don't want to dwell on the fear. I don't want to dwell on fear in general in life, but I also don't want to dwell on fear in this conversation right here. I want to talk about the fact that you can do it scared. So you can go on and you won't really ever get rid of the fear per se, but you can then still act anyway. But there's a path to that. So before you get to the point of having an action plan and being able to follow through on it, you have to come up with finding your courage. This sounds very the Cowardly Lion from you know, it's like if I just had courage. But I love how the book is basically plotted out into three different sections of 7 points each, basically. So it's like part one, fear; part two, courage; part three, action plan. I mean, that's so simple and so and then also broken down into those seven things. So it's like it's super easy to follow. But let's talk about courage. Like, it's not as simple as this. It's not as simple as saying, okay, I know my fear archetype. Now I can go pick out my one principle of courage that applies to that. It's all the principles apply.
It's all the principles.
So you can go back to that fear archetype and you can say, hey, you're just one fear archetype. I've got 7 different principles of courage to overcome you.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, really what it is and where the principles of courage fit in is that regardless of which archetype resonates strongest with you. I mean, and there really are, it's helpful to identify it because then you can start to see where the patterns are happening and what has previously been happening subconsciously now starts happening consciously. And you can start to go, oh, okay, these are the thoughts that are happening. Now I need to replace these thoughts. Well, what do you replace it with? What you replace it with is exactly what we talk about in the principles of courage. It's a new set of core beliefs that are going to expand your horizons a little bit and help you overcome what have previously been these limiting beliefs that are happening subconsciously. And so some of these principles will definitely resonate for some people with certain archetypes more than others, but they are sort of universal principles of courage that I think can help you no matter what your fear archetype is.
Yeah. And I can actually, now I can say without, you know, again, without having confirmed my archetype, though I said procrastinator and excuse maker, or even pessimist, that the ones that stuck out for me in terms of the principles of courage, although they all did, was to just keep going, which to me, that's like the anti-adversity. You know, yes. If you come up with adversity, just keep going. Get back up again, you know? And I think then also the always own it mixed with there are no mistakes, only lessons.
That's so funny because if there were three that directly correspond to the three that you meant, the three fear archetypes that you mentioned, it would be exactly those.
Yeah. So I feel pretty good so about true. Where I'm headed then.
Yeah. That's so absolutely true. But yes, I mean, we can talk about each of those individually, but the just keep going. I mean, that is really, that's where I feel like even through my own story and what I've learned, if I've learned one thing in life, it is that you can do anything that you want to do. You can achieve anything that you want to achieve. You can get anywhere you want to get to, and it might take a while, but the key is to just not quit. Just keep going no matter what, because you can't always control what happens to you or how people treat you or what bad things are going to come your way. But the one thing that you can control is how you decide to respond to it. And if you adopt a mentality, I am not going to quit, then there is nothing that can stand in your way in any endeavor in life, really.
It sounds to me like just keep going is almost the seeds of what got planted in you when your dad was having you go get on the treadmill.
Absolutely. And I didn't
literally just keep going on the treadmill. Yeah.
And I think that's important to remember too, is because I can look back on that story and see all the lessons that were there. But at the time, it felt impossible. I mean, if you would have said to me back then that I would, have any semblance of a normal life, much less have the life that I have now and, you know, a beautiful family and a job that I love and plenty of money, like all of these things that I would have never even in a million years imagined for myself. But at the time, it was just a matter of taking that one step and the next step and the next step. And I think now that I have the benefit of hindsight, I can look back and go, oh, that was all I did. And I think that has helped me now in my present life to realize anytime a piece of adversity comes my way, I look at that as a gift because I know that it's going to teach me something. And I know that overcoming that is going to be the thing that gives me the courage to do the next thing.
Hiring can be hard. I've been on both sides of the equation there. It's hard to find qualified candidates. It takes a long time. There can be tons of applicants. You can have too many to go through. You can even feel like that on the opposite side of things when you're the one who's trying to apply. But ZipRecruiter makes it easy. It is the place where growing businesses can connect to qualified candidates at ZipRecruiter.com/beyond. And the way the ZipRecruiter works is it sends your job over to 100 of the web's leading job boards. But they don't just stop there. They keep going by using their powerful matching technology, scanning thousands of resumes to find the people with the right experience, and then invite them to apply for the job you have available. Then as the applicants come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each of them, spotlights the top candidates to make sure you don't miss those best matches for you. And ZipRecruiter is so effective, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/beyond. That's ZipRecruiter.com/beyond, BEYOND, ZipRecruiter.com/beyond. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Let's talk about this, that there's no mistakes, only lessons. For me, that's the perfectionist, the procrastinator there, that it's like, oh, if I can't get it right, why is it even worth doing?
Oh, and that's so true. And so the procrastinator is actually the number one archetype. And that's the number one fear for people is this fear of making a mistake. And honestly, I think if I've learned anything in my life as an entrepreneur, it's that every mistake is a lesson that helps me do something right. And when you can start to look at your life with that mentality, that even when you lose, you win because you're learning something, and that lesson is what's going to carry you on and do the next thing even better. When you can start to adopt that mentality in everything that you do, then there's nothing that can stand in your way. You don't have to be afraid of mistakes because you can embrace them. Instead, you can embrace them as this opportunity to learn. And it's a win-win no matter what.
I think that's the thing for me is like, I'm aware of it. So what's great is like being aware of the fear and being even aware of the antidote to that fear, or I should say the real truth, not the fake truth that the fear kind of presents you with. Right.
Yes.
So by having that understanding, that's kind of the goal here, right? Is for people to go through the book and realize, you know, have a clarity on what your fears are, then get even more clarity on how they can deal with those. And then they can put an action plan in place and actually act, even if they're still fearful.
Exactly. Because it starts with the identity, figuring out where this is happening. Because when it's happening subconsciously, you can't do anything about it. And then you got to work on your mindset. But then exactly like you said, then the next step is action. It's not enough to start changing the way your thought patterns, which is essential, but you have to also be willing to take the step. You can't think about the step. You got to take the step. Action is the antidote to fear. And I think that's where I go like really practical in the book, because I think for so many people, sometimes you can go, yeah. You can talk about all this stuff and it's all great in theory, but how do I actually do it? How do I actually make this happen in my life? And so I give some really like super practical tips for how you can actually implement this and make this happen on a daily basis.
Well, let's go there. Well, actually, what was the other one? There was one other one. What did I pick? It was the
Always Own It.
That's it. So that, what's that one about? Because I know, you know, that one fits with me it's almost like a sister or brother to the Make No Mistakes one, because it's almost being honest that you caused it, which can feel really defeating to somebody if they're a perfectionist, but it's almost the first step in realizing, oh, I made the mistake, but it's not a mistake. It's only a lesson.
It's only a lesson. Well, and owning it goes a little bit beyond that. Even it's taking full ownership and 100% complete responsibility for everything that happens to you. And by that, I don't mean, you know, that you're at fault anytime something bad happens to you or somebody treats you badly, because that is, you're not necessarily at fault. But if you allow that to be your excuse for not moving forward, or you allow yourself to get stuck in that, it doesn't serve you. So, and I say this in this chapter, even a good excuse is still an excuse. And there are so many people out there who will take the fact that they grew up in poverty, or they didn't have access to the same opportunities that someone else had, or because they had some sort of abuse in their life, or some sort of hardship, or their parents didn't treat them right, or, you know, the list goes on and on, or they experienced illness, or they don't have a lot of money, whatever it is, there's every excuse in the book. And so many of those hardships are legitimate hardships. I'm not negating the pain. I am not negating the pain of depression or of abuse or of any other hard thing that has happened in your life. That is real stuff. But allowing that to be the thing that holds you back does not serve you. And so if you can understand that about your life, and if you can say, it doesn't matter what's happened to me, it doesn't matter what opportunities I haven't had, it doesn't matter if life's not fair, it doesn't matter that somebody was mean to me somewhere, or I had all of these hard things and adversity to go through, I am not going to accept that as my truth and I'm not going to accept that as my excuse in life for not doing the things that I want to do. And when you can make that decision, consciously make that decision to never allow excuses to be the thing that holds you back, that's when you also become unstoppable. Because it's so freeing, because you get to take 100% ownership of what happens to you. You don't have to wait for anybody else. It doesn't matter at that point how other people treat you or what things come your way, because as we all know, hardship is going to come. There's going to be something that throws you for a loop. There's going to be something that happens that's not fair, or somebody does something that's kind of sucky, or whatever it is in your life. But when you've taken the ownership for it, then you don't have to be controlled by that anymore. You get to call the shots, and that's pretty amazing. So yeah. Getting into a point where you can say, doesn't matter. My past does not define me. What has happened to me does not define me. What defines me from this point on is the choices that I make for myself.
Yeah. It's also owning that you have agency, that you have the ability to make a decision about what you're going to do with whatever happened to you in the past, and that you still have the power to make a decision and decide your path moving forward.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
So speaking of path forward, this is where then, if we've done our analysis of our fear, we've figured out and really done our homework and gotten clarity on how we can then overcome that fear. It's not, you know, it's almost like hurdling a wall. It's the wall's not going away, but we can now go over the wall, and now we can actually go forward with an action plan. So what are some of the best ways to still act even though you're fearful?
Well, that's a big question.
It is.
You know, one thing I would suggest that you do, based on whatever your fear is, and I have some like macro ideas, like big picture ideas, and some micro ideas. So this is a micro idea, but whatever your fear archetype is, once you've identified that. So for me, I'm the outcast. So my deepest fear is rejection. And the way that that often plays out in my life is that I will reject other people before I can be rejected in return. And one of the things that I have found to be really helpful in helping me overcome this fear is to practice rejection and practice putting myself out there in a way that would allow me to be rejected and to become a little bit immune to it. So do you remember the movie, The Princess Bride?
Oh, totally. Favorite. One of my favorites.
Such a good movie. Yes. Oh, I love it so much. So, you know, where Wesley and the guy, the little guy, whatever his name was, Vincini,
yes,
are sitting there with the iocane powder, and Wesley, you know, wins this duel and explains that he's built up this immunity to iocane powder. And that's why he doesn't die, because the cups were both poisoned. And that's exactly the idea there. So you do little things to help build up your immunity. So for me, as an outcast and dealing with this rejection, I have one thing that I've always been really afraid of in my business is to reach out to people and to put myself out there to pitch people or to collaborate with other bloggers or other podcasters or anything to reach out and to say, hey, you know, I'd love to get to know you, or, you know, hey, would you ever consider having me as a podcast guest? You probably know where this is going, because I think you received a message from me saying, hey, would you ever consider having me as a podcast guest? But that was me practicing, overcoming this fear. And what happened is that I have some great accountability partners, and they saw that that fear was really holding me back and in my business. And they said, you know what, you have got to get over this. You have got to practice pitching people. And so they made me pitch 20 people in 24 hours.
Wow.
And I think you might have been one of those people in that first wave, but because they made a list of all the different people I needed to reach out to. And it was really funny. But what that did is it helped build up that immunity. But that's so, and it's funny because this is how you know that fears really impact people individually. Because as you're listening to this, I don't think outcast is your fear. So that you're probably listening to this going, that doesn't sound that scary. And for anyone who's not an outcast listening to this, they're probably like, oh yeah, that doesn't really feel that scary. But then when I start to talk about if you're a procrastinator, well, what you need to maybe work on is consciously practicing making mistakes and doing things really quickly without making sure that they're perfect, or not revising things and just publishing them and putting them out there without having to edit. What if you were to do a podcast episode without giving yourself the option to edit anything?
Oh gosh, that's frightening.
Right? So that's exactly it. What if you challenged yourself to just publish this podcast with any mistakes or put that out there? If you can practice building up your immunity, that's when you can start to overcome the fear. So that's on the micro level, one of the like smaller day-to-day things that you can do to help yourself overcome your unique fear. But on a macro level, and this is more of a universal thing, regardless of what your fear archetype is, I'm a huge, huge believer in giving yourself a target and giving yourself permission to set bigger goals for yourself. You know, research shows, and you talk a lot about productivity. So I'm sure you've talked a lot about goal setting and, mm-hmm. and all these different things. So, and you can cut in if you have a different theory on any of this, but I'm a real firm believer in setting stretch goals for yourself. And I think so many people cut themselves off at the knees before they even dare to dream. Before they've even given themselves permission to set that big goal, they're immediately thinking about all the ways that they don't know how to do it. They don't know how to make it happen. And so they can't even give themselves permission to have that as a goal because they don't know what the how is just yet. And so I tell people to start by giving yourself permission to dream about the what without needing to know the how it's going to happen, because the how can come later. And then I talk very specifically about how to take that big goal once you have that big goal and break it down into smaller, more manageable bites that you start following through on every day.
So with setting goals, so I will interject, but here I'll interject with somebody else's words because, you know, I've kind of experienced them to be true for myself at least, and maybe others have too. It's John Acuff talks about setting smarter goals. And what that means is not doing like this all or nothing, like I will succeed and I will, you know, I will lose 10 pounds or, you know, and then if they lose 8, they feel like they failed.
Yes.
And again, part of me, that's the perfectionist. It's like, oh, I didn't get the 10. I only got the 8. And so, and it happened where it was like, you know, you'd set, like he'd be working with groups, with research for that book. And it was like, they'd have 30 days to, you know, they'd set a goal for 30 days. And a lot of people, they'd set like a 10 pound goal. And because they'd set it for 10, and then they'd start to maybe, you know, get off track a little bit, then they would just quit altogether. Whereas if they set it smaller for like 5, it was easier for them to continue to maintain it. In fact, most of them actually blew past 5 because it was a smaller goal to hit to. And that's almost the antithesis of a stretch goal in a weird way. Like a stretch goal is like, yeah, oh, I'm going to try and get further. So what do you think about the contrast between those two things?
You know, and I think that there's more than one way to do things in life. I don't think there's ever all one answer. And I think that there's research that backs up both philosophies. I think, you know, if you look at Charles Duhigg and the research that he's done, he really talks about stretch goals and how you stretch goals are the things that will motivate us to start thinking bigger and getting us more excited about what we're going after. And so that's the area that I like to think about stretch goals, but it doesn't, but I also know that it doesn't work for every single person. I do know people who get very demotivated when they feel like they can't attain something. So for some people, it's going to be very motivating. For other people, it's going to be very demotivating. But one of the things that I talk about real specifically is about, like, it's not enough to just have the stretch goal. I think giving yourself a bigger target and something to aim for is something that I firmly believe in, because I've seen it work for so many people. But then you have to still break that down into things that are very attainable. I think sometimes the problem for so many people with stretch goals is not that the goal's too big, that it's demotivating. It's that the goal is not broken down enough. And that is demotivating, because we can, nobody can lose 100 pounds tomorrow. Right. So we need to have a way of connecting what we can do right now in this moment today with something that's going to connect us to that bigger goal. And so what I teach is a system called Think Big, Plan Small, and it's about creating these stretch goals and then breaking down those stretch goals into smaller, more manageable bites. So if you have this big dream for your life, then what part of that big dream do you want to try to accomplish this year, which is still going to be probably a pretty big goal, right? You could have a whole year to do something. It's going to be more than losing 5 pounds. So what's that going to be? Then you set your goal for the year that's going to get you closer to that lifetime goal. And then you take that goal for the year and you say, okay, now what do I need to do this month? I have 12 months in a year. So what is 1/12 of that goal going to look like? And what do I need to do this month that's going to get me closer to that goal for the year? But that's not enough. Then every single week you say, okay, what am I going to do this week that's going to get me closer to that goal for the month? And you're not thinking about the whole big goal, lifetime goal. You're thinking just in terms of the next piece, just in terms of how do I get closer to the goal for the month? You got 4 weeks in a month. What's 1/4 of that goal for the month? And then every day you're doing something that's going to help you get that goal for the week done. And this is actually something I have a members community called Doing It Scared that I literally once a week with my community, we sit down and we do this. We talk about, okay, what's your goal? What are your goals for the week? How do those relate to your goals for the month? How do those relate to your big goals for the year? And it's the process of doing this over and over and over again that is what's so powerful, because then you can break it down into daily action. And when you break it down that way, it sounds so simple. And I mean, you teach this for a living too. So I'm sure as you know, for most people, it's not that the concepts are difficult to understand, it's that they're difficult to implement. Because what happens for people is that we get so caught up in the whirlwind, in the tornado of all of the things that feel urgent, and some big pie in the sky idea, some big dream that's way out there in the future is never going to feel as urgent as the dinner that needs to be on the table, or the laundry that needs to be done, or the project that's due tomorrow that your boss has been asking you about. It's never going to feel as important as those things. And so we'll always put off the important stuff that's going to get us closer to our big goals in favor of the urgent, unless we find a way to make them a daily part of our lives.
Yeah, that's well put. And ultimately, that still feels like it's almost folding in both of those different goal setting versions into one.
Yeah.
So, and again, depending upon what the goal is or what your own personal psychology is in terms of what your hangups are, or what your fears are, even certain goals or certain goal setting approaches, I should say, are going to help you with certain goals. Like depending upon what the goal is, you might be best to do a stretch goal, or to do it smaller. But I really like what you, just planned out in terms of the long-term giant stretch goal broken down then in the smallest of small increments of that giant stretch goal doesn't really feel like you're stretching.
Right.
It doesn't hurt to do it. You can just do it.
No. And it's not scary. It's not scary that way. And I think that's what's hard about that is to prioritize it. And so that's what I really teach people is that it's all about reframing the way that you think about them. So what I teach people to do is to create your A tasks, your B tasks, and your C tasks for the week. When we plan out our week, we talk about your A tasks, B tasks, and C tasks. A tasks are your must do items. And the only thing that gets to fall into that category are things that are going to get you closer to your big goals and dreams. And for most people, that is such a paradigm shift that it almost like blows their mind for a while. And they're really resistant to it because most people, what they put in their A tasks are the things that I say are B tasks. Those are your should do's. Those are the things that are your tornado, the urgent things, the things that feel more important than your A tasks in the moment. And so you have to force your brain to recategorize things and reprioritize things so that you're always making your A tasks first and blocking out time for those things first before you're making time for the things that historically you've always put first.
Yeah. Those are the, I'm sure you're probably familiar with this, and I think I've mentioned it on the show or someone else has, but either way, the prioritization where, you've got a jar and you can only fit, you've got big rocks, small rocks, and then tiny rocks. And if you put the tiny rocks in, then, ultimately you can't fit the big rocks in if you don't put them in first. So those are the A rocks basically.
Absolutely. So,
ultimately, I need to now go do the assessment and start from there moving forward. But I know that a lot of people are going to want to go do that as well as grab the book and even subscribe to your podcast, the Do It Scared podcast. And I mean, if you want to share a little bit about what you talk on there, I think it's, the same as what we're talking about here, but just broken down. I'm going to link to all of these things in the show notes. What's the URL for people to go try the assessment?
You can just go to doitscared.com and Okay. Everything is right there on Perfect. The homepage. So it's pretty easy to find.
Perfect. So I'll link that up. I mean, if you're on your phone and you want to go check it out right now, just pull it out as you're listening to this and go straight over to doitscared.com. And if that's not correct, just click the show notes in the episode while you're playing it. And there you go. See, I'm being imperfect and it doesn't matter. So Ruth, Ruth, this has been great. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We'll have to do this again sometime.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It was great to be here and, good luck doing it scared.
Thanks.
Well, that's another episode checked off your podcast listening to-do list. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Ruth Sukup. So make sure to head on over to the show notes for this episode so that you can go ahead and take the assessment, get more information on the book, and dig deeper on your fears and how they are holding you back. Whether you're aware of them now or not, you can find those show notes over at beyondthetodolist.com/274. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would love for you to think of that one person that you know should hear this episode. You know who I'm talking about. There's somebody as you were listening to this that you thought of, so-and-so needs to hear this conversation. I think it would really help them out. Do them a favor, and at the same time, do me a favor by sharing this episode with them. You can find, again, the share buttons for this episode over at beyondthetodolist.com/274, or just hit the share buttons inside of whatever podcast player you are listening to this show on, and I would be very grateful to you. Thanks again for listening. I really appreciate those of you who reach out and let me know. You can do that, by the way, by going to twitter.com/Eric with a K, the letter J, F-I-S-H-E-R. That's the easiest way. And thanks again for listening. I'll see you next episode.